talking all the coordinator hires league-wide. Can Steve Spagnuolo save the Chiefs' defense? New offensive bosses in Atlanta, Denver, and Jacksonville. The Vikings coach a Super Bowl-winning head coach to oversee their offense. And good Lord, it's a soap opera with this Jets staff. Who made sense? Who didn't so much? And how these guys will mold their teams in 2019? It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramlich. He is Andy Benoit. And Andy, we are going to do something that we neglected through all the madness of the, well, the Super Bowl and the playoffs. We're going to talk about some of the coordinator hires around the NFL and how it's going to affect teams going forward and affect the whole hot stove league, free agency, draft, all that stuff. Should be a series of good conversations.
I would hope so. And coordinators really drive the football side of things on football teams. Head coaches make their stamp on whatever side of the ball they control. And then coordinators, that's where the schematic impact comes along. And something to remember, Gary, you are what you are as a coach schematically a lot of the time. Not very many people are chameleons the way Bill Belichick has been in New England. If you think about the way the offseason's set up, where you got free agency, then the draft, and most of these coaches have draft responsibilities. They have to grade and critique players and meet with potential prospects. Then you got mini camps, and then you're quickly about 6 weeks off into training camp. There isn't a lot of time for you to go out and learn new schemes. You're not going to summits very often. You're not going to conferences. So you coach what you know. Coaches coach what they know, and their schemes will change a little bit, but nobody's going to overhaul their scheme in an offseason because there's no time to do that. So when we go over these guys, I guess listen carefully because it's going to have major impact on what type of players these teams go after. You got to have players that fit your coach's scheme.
Well, let's get to it. We have about 15 of these. If you want to jump around in the show, if you have a favorite team and you only want to hear about that team, we will do AFC first. We have 7 of them. We have NFC next. We have 8 of them. So if you're a fan of an NFC team, just sort of jump to the second half of the show and you will find what you're looking for. But let's start here with the New York Jets. And Andy, I'm sorry to do this, but we have to address, first off, some of the non-schematic things happening with the Jets here, who hire Greg Williams, which in and of itself, not crazy, but they already had Joe Vitt in-house. Joe Vitt is Adam Gase's father-in-law. More importantly, Joe Vitt is the guy who, according to a lot of reports, was, you know, basically got Greg Williams caught during Bounty Gate. So we have an interesting little, side story going on here with the Jets. And you know I like Adam Gase. I like Adam Gase a lot. I think he got a raw deal in Miami. The whole way this has gone for the first month, whether it's the opening press conference where he had the eyes like, if anyone watches the Adult Swim show Tig Tone, he kind of looked like a character out of that. And now the Williams-Vitt stuff, it's been a bit of a circus-like atmosphere with the Jets through the first month of the Adam Gase era.
Absolutely. Joe Vitt will be their outside linebackers coach and senior defensive assistant. I guess that means on paper he probably ranks below Greg Williams, but yeah. The fact that he's Adam Gase's father-in-law, for all intents and purposes, job security-wise, he's probably going to rank above Greg Williams if this is Adam Gase's decision. That's what makes you wonder, Gary, is it's hard to envision Adam Gase bringing in the guy who is father-in-law. And if you read what Joe Vitt said about Greg Williams, it was a lot of personal stuff about Greg Williams wouldn't take his anger medication and you had to deal with him differently when he didn't. I mean, that's that kind of thing to say that. And he didn't go to the press and say it, but it obviously got out there. He said it on the record that got Greg Williams suspended in New Orleans. It's hard to imagine that Gase would bring in that guy to coordinate his defense on fully Gase's volition, on his full decision.
He also had a little bit of drama here with Blake Williams, Greg Williams' son, who I guess Greg Williams wanted him as a position coach, and Adam Gase said no, he can come in as basically a catch-all assistant type of a position, but you had a little bit of not really being on the same page there. This is as weird a hire as I can think of in the sort of assembling your staff stage of the offseason.
Well, and Blake Williams coaches linebackers typically. That's what he's done throughout most of his career, and they've got Joe Vitt as one of them, and then Frank Bush is a 56-year-old veteran coach, 56 years of age. He's their inside linebackers coach. So they were set at that position. The fact that Gase didn't have a spotter was I don't know how, you know, we don't know how welcoming he was and how these conversations went, if it just looks like he said no to Blake, or if he indeed pounded the tables and said no and they had to create a position for Blake. We don't know that, but the idea that there wasn't a natural spot for Blake Williams here when there has been for other teams Greg Williams has coached, that also makes you wonder if Greg Williams was Adam Gase's decision or not.
Well, let's set all that aside. Let's suspend disbelief and say Greg Williams and Joe Vitt got together and had a couple kombuchas and made up for past differences, and now they're the best of friends. Greg Williams, schematically, he asks a lot of his players. It's a talented Jets defense. I think we both agree on that. Do you feel like it's a Jets defense that's ready to handle the type of just sort of expansive responsibilities that Greg Williams is probably going to put on them?
Theoretically, that's what Todd Bowles theoretically was brought in to do, I think, years ago. 2015 is when Bowles came on, and that's also when Mike Maccagnan, their general manager, came on. So, which kind of, to tie it back to what we just said, if someone's deciding that it's Greg Williams and that someone is not Adam Gase, it's reasonable to believe it would be Mike Maccagnan from the Jets front office, the GM, wanting that, because Williams is so similar to Todd Bowles. They're both aggressive, blitz-oriented guys. So that's the kind of defense the Jets want to run. And kind of getting from knowing people in that front office, I think that is what they want to do. They want to be more of a 3-4 defense. And any more when you say 3-4, what you really mean is your approach to passing downs, because everybody's a nickel defense one way or the other.
Yeah.
But the 3-4 teams tend to be the blitz-oriented, high-volume schematic teams. I think that's what the Jets want to do. They should be prepared for that because they've been drafting guys to fit a similar scheme over the years. Mm-hmm. But if that had worked perfectly, they wouldn't be changing coordinators because Todd Bowles would still be here too.
I'll just throw out there, they had a lot of changeover last year. They brought in a lot of new guys. I do wonder if this would have gone much better in year two under Todd Bowles. I know it was not his second year with the team, but it was sort of the second year with the core that they have in there now. I'll be cautiously optimistic that if the drama subsides between the coaches, that you have something that might work here for the Jets.
Well, Morris Claiborne and Buster Skrine are both free agents, and those are man-to-man corners opposite Tremaine Johnson, who was a very disappointing free agent signing last year, an expensive guy. Let's say Tremaine Johnson, let's assume he bounces back because he's talented and he's bounced back before. They've got to figure out who's going to be at cornerback, because if you don't have corners, you can't blitz. And they've got a lot of directions to go because their pass rush has no natural pass rushers. So if they want to go with an edge guy, they can do that. What's interesting about Greg Williams, Gary, is he does almost, in my opinion, I think at times he does too much stuff. But his two staples, it's the blitzing that we've talked about, and then it's cover two, straight just vanilla cover two. And they might get to it in different ways at times. So I guess it's not vanilla cover two, but it's very basic zone coverage. That's not typically, you don't see cover two defenses that are also high volume blitz defense. That's playing off both sides of the menu there. But if you're going to be a cover two defense, you need natural pass rushers. So however it is, there's no defense in the NFL that can survive without corners or pass rushers. Preferably you have both. The Jets need each of those things, and how they go about it and who they draft, that might give us some more information about what type of defense they'll have under Williams, if he can control himself. I think Williams, I imagine, will say, yeah, we'll scale it back, and I could see him in the middle of the season throwing the kitchen sink still.
Yeah, I mean, you like what they have up the middle. Like you said, they need corners. They need some sort of pass rush presence. They will pick third overall. They don't have a second round pick because of the Sam Darnold trade up a year ago. So they have the ability to add a piece or two here in the offseason. But it seems like it's something of a transition year again for this Jets team. Let's go to the Bengals real quick. And we actually, at the time we are taping, we don't have an answer on who the Bengals defense coordinator will be. Zach Taylor is the new head coach there, and it seems like there is some hesitancy. I don't know if it's the reputation of the organization overall that are making people hesitant to go in there. They really need to reimagine what they do defensively because it was not working last year. They're probably, it sounds like they're ready to move on from Vontaze Burfict, who, he had another concussion. Who knows if he'll be able to continue with his career, but they were bad in the front seven last year. Not terrible on the back end, but bad in the front seven.
Yeah, and that's hard. So we just said you need pass rushers if you're going to run a cover two scheme, and that's basically what they've run over the years. And I think it is, I agree with you, it is time for a change. And even if Burfict's back, they need some speed at linebacker. They were hamstrung at times by guys that just don't move very well. And Burfict does not move very well in space. He's a good player in other areas. But I think if they can get more athletic at linebacker, that would do a lot. But they got to figure out who's going to be coaching these linebackers. It's a little bit unsettling that Zach Taylor, who's in his first year as a head coach and has really skyrocketed into the position, probably faster than anyone we've ever seen into a head coach, at least of recent memory. Ideally, you'd want what McVay had when he got that kind of job, which is Wade Phillips opposite him, Jack Del Rio. And I saw Del Rio at the Senior Bowl and Mobile, and I've known him for a while. I talked to him, and he couldn't say one way or the other if he had the job because the Bengals weren't allowed to announce anything like that at the time. But my sense was he had the job. Something changed there. So they don't have the experienced head coach opposite Zach Taylor now. Bill Callahan's not coming over as the O-line coach. Washington, I bet Taylor asked and Washington said no. So there's another guy who is an experienced head coach that's not going to be part of the equation. Not in a very experienced staff overall, Gary.
Yeah, it seems like that team has sort of sunk to the bottom of the AFC North at this point. I talked to you about this a couple weeks ago, but I do want to refresh what we talked about with Zach Taylor. Andy Dalton. Is Andy Dalton a long-ish term, not necessarily long-term, but a long-ish term solution there for Zach Taylor? Or do you think he goes out and gets another quarterback? Young quarterback, I should say.
Yeah, sure. What Dalton does well is understands the pre-snap phase. And when the read becomes defined for him, especially if he's identifying that read based on his own pre-snap recognition, he's a good system type, rhythm, timing quarterback. That's what Taylor's scheme does. So I think there's a chance for Andy Dalton here. When things get the least bit off schedule, that's where you get erratic Andy Dalton. And now we're just getting into philosophy here. Is that acceptable or not? The scheme, theoretically, the scheme will make things more on schedule than ever for Andy Dalton.
Let's go to the Chiefs. And what I would say is the most important coordinator hiring of the offseason, considering the Chiefs are, we assume they're going to score points here. The question is, can they stop people, which obviously is what we saw derailed them in the AFC title game this year. But Steve Spagnuolo ends up the defensive coordinator there. What differences are there between him and Bob Sutton? What do you expect to change there in Kansas City? Because something had to change.
Yeah, something did have to change. Spagnuolo, I had a coach tell me once, I asked him, do you like playing as an offensive coach? I said, do you like playing against Steve Spagnuolo? He said, no, I do not. I said, why is that? He said, because you're never quite sure what he's going to do. He brings a lot at you, and it feels like blitzing's kind of become the theme of this show, but Spagnuolo does that often with his linebackers involved, a linebacker or a slot corner. But he's not necessarily only a blitzing guy. Then the coach did add, he says he throws a lot at you. I'm not sure he always knows the reasons for what he's doing, but he's doing them nonetheless, and as a coach, you have to deal with that.
Yeah, he's a guy who had some success with that Giants sort of rebuild they had going on there. He's battled with Andy Reid when he was defense coordinator, and Andy Reid was coaching the Eagles back in the late 2000-aughts or whatever we're going to call that decade. But it seems encouraging just because it's going to be different than what you had under Bob Sutton. And we talked about this a little bit late in the year. The Chiefs needed to generate some sort of pressure to offset their problems on the back end, and this is at least an alternative solution, if not the right solution.
Well, and the biggest difference between Spagnuolo and Sutton is when, and this is actually one of the things that sets Spagnuolo apart. If we're to go off of how he coached with the Giants a few years ago in his second stint with the Giants, is that when he does bring pressure, he keeps two safeties back deep a lot of the times, which is unusual. Almost always it's one safety back deep, because it's hard to have two safeties back if you're needing guys to blitz. You just don't have enough bodies to do all of that. But Spagnuolo matchup zone schemes behind blitzes, so it's a little bit, I guess it's a safer type of blitz, but more two deep safeties than one deep. The other thing that's going to be a big deal is how they go about their run defense and what kind of a, you know, Spagnuolo is not a 3-4 guy the way Sutton is. And I think that whole 3-4-4-3 thing gets way overblown. It's almost means nothing at times. But in Kansas City's case, it did mean something, because they would do two gap concepts out of their 3-4. Spagnuolo will do a little bit more 4-3 stuff. So that's where they really need the change, is overhauling their approach to run defense.
Well, a familiar name here. John DeFilippo gets the Jaguars' job. He is the offense coordinator there now. We have no idea what they're going to be offensively, I guess. DeFilippo was criticized for not running the ball enough in Minnesota, because he is a passing design guru here, and he takes over a team that has basically been building up like it's 1981, and they're trying to just run the ball 50 times a game. So I'm guessing we're going to have a complete revamping of this Jaguars offense.
Maybe. I mean, if they're going to revamp, though, how? Their offensive line, they've just re-signed Brandon Linder, I think, 2 years ago. Andrew Norwell was signed recently, so he's in the meat of his contract. Cam Robinson's a second-round pick from 2017. They've invested already in the O-line, and those are that's what they have, and then their wide receivers are younger. They don't have a quarterback. I guess that kind of changes the whole conversation a little bit.
Yeah, we assume there will be in the Nick Foles derby here. If they miss out on him, they have a chance to draft a quarterback high. So they'll bring in someone. It won't be Blake Bortles again. But I mean, I don't know. Let's say they sign Nick Foles, or they trade for Nick Foles and then sign him. Do they have the receiving core? They really don't have a lot of contested catch guys. I mean, Foles enjoyed throwing to Alshon Jeffrey and doing the, as Chris Collinsworth would say 1,000 times during a broadcast, above the rim type of guys. Jaguars don't have those kind of guys in the receiving core.
No, maybe they think DJ Chark can become that. I watched all of his snaps this year, but there wasn't enough on him. Was he that kind of guy in college? Gary, I don't think he played that way as a rookie this year.
No, not really. I mean, he's a guy you put on the boundary and stretch the field.
Okay, so let's think about the characters involved, because as we said at the top, coaches coach what they know. And here the three guys that matter here in Jacksonville, let's assume it's Nick Foles or insert any placeholder QB. They're not going to find a quarterback that they build their offense around immediately right now. So it's going to be some generic type of quarterback. DeFilippo is of the belief that it doesn't matter if you run or throw. It's about creating opportunities, easy opportunities for your guys to get the ball in space. So in other words, some of your runs can be screen passes, quick flare routes to the flat, easy dump off hitch routes. The short passing game can act as the running game to a certain degree, and I think he's comfortable being aggressive, throwing the ball downfield. He does not do isolation routes. It'll be route combinations. That's how he plays. Doug Marrone wants to have a smash mouth running offense, and that's because in large part I think it's a philosophy, but Tom Coughlin, who's the third guy that matters in Jacksonville, he has that philosophy. So these things, you're correct, they do not add up very well. The Jaguars, stylistically, that roster is not built to play the way Marrone and Coughlin want to play. They're not road graders. They've got the offensive line they've invested in, but they're not road graders. Leonard Fournette, I think there's 1,000 other Leonard Fournettes out there you could go find. He doesn't bring any special dimension to your offense. So maybe this Dave Filippo hiring is Marone and Coughlin kind of seeding to, okay, we've got to be a little bit more flexible in how we do things on offense.
Yeah, you hate to sit back and say, there's a window with this defense. They're young on defense, but it just seemed like they had the pieces in place for this defense to dominate, and could they put together basically a league-average offense to complement it? They did not last year, and we'll see if they can this year, but it does seem like it's going to be a fairly significant transition with this Jaguars offense. Let's go Browns here. Steve Wilks. Steve Wilks, who had a really interesting 2 years. He was the first-year coordinator in Carolina after being a longtime defensive backs coach there. That was in 2017, ran out a lot of fire zone blitzes and sort of changed what they do, and then went to a Cardinals team as a head coach, a defense that really didn't fit what he had done in Carolina. And we can have the conversation, should he have gotten more of a chance to sort of revamp that in his own image, but he didn't, and now he's in Cleveland, where he'll essentially be the head coach of the defensive side of the ball there with Freddie Kitchens as the actual head coach.
So Wilks is similar to Greg Williams, who he's replacing, and I thought things went well under Greg Williams last year for this Browns defense. When Wilks plays zone, it tends to be cover two type of stuff, which didn't fit the guys he had in Arizona, but it will fit the guys he has in Cleveland a little bit better. I don't know if it's a perfect fit, but it's what they've done under Greg Williams with some success recently. And then, as you said, fire zones, and what fire zones are, they basically are just blitzing with zone coverage. There tends to be three deep defenders, three underneath defenders, so it's a zone, but because there's only six guys back there, those guys wind up playing man-to-man. So think of a fire zone as a zone with man principles in it, and that's going to be their MO and formula. It's not super different from what they've done before. What you have to wonder about with Wilks, when he was in Carolina 2 years ago, their fire zones got figured out in the second half of the season. They were very predictable out of them, and offenses identified what it was. Some of it was they didn't have a lot of talent at safety, and the safeties weren't super disciplined. And if you're going to be a fire zone defense, you have to have subtly disguising type of safeties, Eric Weddle type of guys that can make it blurry, because otherwise you're just exposing yourself by only having six guys back in zone coverage. So how they teach those safeties will be a big deal there, and Wilks needs his safeties. It's Demaryius Randle, it's Jabril Peppers. Derek Kindred rotates in, but Kindred started rotating a little bit less last year as the season went on. It's Jabril Peppers I would imagine they hope he's ultimately the guy. How those two perform will go a long ways towards deciding how successful the Browns are under Steve Wilks.
Yeah, those safeties they're not veterans. They're young, they're talented, and I guess Wilks has a chance to mold them as he sees fit. I hope he gets a little bit more consistency out of that linebacking core as well. But let's go.
You've always been on those Brown linebackers.
I have. They just should be better. They're good athletes, and they just sort of never they never became more than that, I guess, would be my criticism. I'm sure they're all nice fellas, though. Let's go to Denver now. Vic Fangio takes over as the head coach, obviously a defensive guy. His offense coordinator, Rich Scangarello. I believe I've pronounced that properly. I've actually not heard it spoken before, Andy. I've only seen it spelled. So Scangarello is, I believe, how it's pronounced. And he is they pried him away from Kyle Shanahan, and the reports were that they were not letting him interview earlier in the offseason. Isn't that true, Andy?
Yeah, Shanahan was not going to let Scangarello interview because he didn't want to just lose a coach on a lateral promotion. So then once he found out, he called, I think he talked to the guys in Denver and found out, okay, this is a true promotion for Scangarello. He'll get a chance to call the plays in Denver. He's not going to be doing that as long as I'm the head coach in San Fran, because that's what I do if I'm Kyle Shanahan. If it's a true promotion, okay, we'll let him go. And that's Shanahan's attitude towards everything. Mike LaFleur, their wide receivers coach, who's a really good rising young coach, Shanahan did not let him go join his brother Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, because it would have been, even though LaFleur, I think, was going to get the offensive coordinator title in Green Bay, which is technically a step up for him. He's a passing game coordinator now as the receivers coach in San Fran. The title wasn't coming with more responsibility and increased job duties. So Shanahan said no to that. So that's kind of Shanahan's rule. If you're going to get more responsibility somewhere, we'll let you go. But if it's just you're moving to move staffs, we're not going to let you go. And Scangarello, he's going to get a lot of responsibility because Vic Fangio is very much a defensive-minded coach.
Yes, he is. He is not going to do much on that side of the ball. Scangarello, so 2 years as quarterbacks coach in San Francisco. Before that, he was a offensive quality control coach in Atlanta. That's his – and if you go back to, a decade, he did a little bit of work at the Raiders, but so are we going to see this Broncos offense sort of roll out those condensed formations and be this Kyle Shanahan style offense?
I don't know if we'll see the condensed formations. Shanahan does that a little bit, but really what it is, it's the outside zone game. It's the Mike Shanahan thing, which is why Mike Shanahan was a head coaching candidate here with Fangio in the mix. It's why we heard about Gary Kubiak was going to come back and coordinate this offense, and I think we were all surprised when that fell through, given how Kubiak and Elway have such a rapport.
Yeah.
John Elway's got his fingerprints on the Broncos more than any front office guy has on his team in the NFL, from what you hear. And John Elway has an idea what he wants to run. He wants to run the Kyle Shanahan type of stuff. And Scangarello's signed up for it. And he's one thing he's going to have to be able to deal with, I'm sure, and that Fangio's going to have to be able to deal with, is Elway making his voice heard on this. Because there's no way John Elway does not already have a specific idea in mind about what he wants this offense to look like.
Yeah, they got some good young pieces in there. They sort of, out of necessity, played a lot of young skill position players a year ago. And it'll be interesting to see how this offense is built up. Case Keenum might get another year as the starter. They can certainly go ahead. And, he does not have a contract that would preclude them from bringing in a rookie quarterback to sort of take the reins from him. But I don't know. Interesting team going forward. Still have a pretty good defense. See what they can do here. Let's go Dolphins as our last AFC team here. We talk a lot about first-time head coaches hiring guys who have had head coaching experience. That was not the case for Brian Flores. The de facto defensive coordinator in New England brings on a Patriots staffer with him to run the offense. That is Chad O'Shea. Spent a decade as receivers coach in New England, so we don't really know a whole lot about him. Minnesota before that, but he's just been on Josh McDaniel's staff for a very long time, and I guess Bill O'Brien before that.
And let's understand, Flores has been in New England his entire coaching career, which is incredible. He came out as a scouting assistant in 2004, so he's a scout for several years, and then a special teams assistant in 2008. So that 2008 year was when he first got into coaching. But Flores knows the Patriot approach, and that's the only approach he knows. We can imagine Chad O'Shea is being brought in to establish Patriot type of concepts. And he's your wide receivers coach. So I would imagine we'll see a lot of the pre-snap motioning, stack releases, bunch releases, a highly schemed offense. And that's not something that everybody in the NFL can do. That's a very specialized approach to offense because there are so many details that go into that. That's the best we can guess, Gary, is that's what Chad O'Shea is going to run, because we don't know anything else about him or Flores, really, for that matter.
Can I just throw in real quick my favorite part of Chad O'Shea's bio here? Volunteer assistant for the Chiefs in 2003. I like the volunteer part of that. Like, my wife goes in between freelance projects and volunteers at my daughter's school. Bring in some art projects for the players, some arts and crafts, color in your own playbook. It's nice.
Do you think he made that part of his bio himself. Like, if you were a coach and now he's gotten far enough in his career that it doesn't matter, but let's say he's still a wide receivers coach and he's trying to move up the ranks, do you want that word volunteer as part of your work history experience in the NFL?
Maybe that's why I appealed to the Dolphins so much. He's going to work for a minimum wage here. But, yeah, I would – this was, I should say, off his Wikipedia bio, so not his official Miami Dolphins bio. We'll see.
Okay.
That's something to look out for when the media guides come out next year. But Chad O'Shea and Brian Flores keeping the Patriots – I don't know, the patriotisms together here for the Miami Dolphins.
And remember, Jim Caldwell is involved on that staff as well. And what that's interesting because Caldwell does not run the Patriot stuff. He's a very different type. He runs more of the Peyton Manning stuff where everybody's stationary and spread out. So it'll be interesting to see. My guess is Caldwell's there because he's been experienced on a number of different staffs over the years, and they need some veteran in the room, a veteran coach, kind of like what Zach Taylor's trying to find in Cincy. So I would imagine it's the Chad O'Shea approach to offense. But just keep in mind, Jim Caldwell's involved in the equation.
Caldwell, assistant head coach and quarterbacks coach is his title there. But let's go out to another Patriots assistant. We're going to switch over to the NFC right now. Matt Patricia ends up landing on Daryl Bevel as his offensive coordinator, and there was a little bit of drama around this one too. But Jim Bob Cooter to Daryl Bevel, what's your read on this, Andy?
My read is that I don't quite get it, to be honest with you. And Jim Bob Cooter, he's actually now on that Adam Gase staff in New York as the running backs coach. And my guess is he'll spend a year there and then he'll get a better job title either there or somewhere else. Kind of like Zach Taylor as the assistant wide receivers coach 2 years ago for the Rams. He was overqualified, but he needed a place to land on a like-minded staff. So that's where Jim Bob Cooter is. But the reason he's over there is Patricia wanted to do that New England stuff. And that's not, and Cooter comes from the Jim Caldwell school. That's who originally hired Cooter. And so Cooter knew the Peyton Manning type of stuff and those routes. And he had a lot to learn about installing the Patriot type of stuff, the motions and the stacks and all that. So it's clear that that's what Patricia wants, because he fired a guy who'd been doing pretty well until Patricia got there, a guy who'd been doing well as offensive coordinator. What I don't understand is Daryl Bevel's not known for that either. Bevel's a little bit more in Seattle, he was more of a stationary formation guy. I mean, he does some bunches, I guess. That's not fair to say he's not at all like that. But Bevel, I've never thought of him as a McVay, Shanahan, Chad O'Shea style of passing game designer. But what we don't know is Bevel's quarterback in Seattle was so unique for so long, and I think there were times where Bevel would probably say privately, there's stuff I can't do with him that I'd like to do because it just doesn't fit his style. So maybe there's parts of Daryl Bevel we don't know about.
Well, I'll just throw this out. There were a couple of guys who were connected to this job, interviewed for it and did not accept it, which could be for a number of reasons. They might have gotten something like Nathaniel Hackett ended up in Green Bay. He might have just landed somewhere else, even though Hackett will obviously be not in full control of the offense there with the Packers. But this Lions offense has clearly built itself to run the ball. I mean, they have made huge investments in the offensive line. They traded up to get Kerryon Johnson in the second round last year. They moved on from Eric Ebron and brought in basically three blocking tight ends. They moved on from Golden Tate. It seems like they are investing in a kind of old school approach on offense, and I do wonder if that was a little bit off putting for potential candidates for this position.
Well, maybe, but the Patriots run that kind of offense still, too. I mean, they have an old-school approach in man-blocking and smash-mouth running, and they do that in the passing game. So I think you could still say it's part of what Bevel just wants to do, couldn't you?
You could. I think the Patriots have a little more talent in the receiving core than the Lions do at this point, as they sort of...
Do you?
I do. I think the Lions sort of stripped the cupboard bare a little bit. You have Kenny Golladay. I think Kenny Golladay is a rising number one receiver. But I guess I don't like playing the what-if game on this, but if you had Golladay plus Golden Tate plus Eric Ebron. That's a really good group there, plus Marvin Jones. I mean, that's a good foursome. Now you have Galladay, you have Marvin Jones, you don't have a tight end. You know, maybe they go get T.J. Hockenson in the draft or something like that. He would fit what they do philosophically from Iowa. I don't know. I mean, they were running out like Andy Jones as their slot receiver instead of Golden Tate last year by the end of the year. So I think they moved on.
Well, when they made that Golden Tate trade, though, they have by that point, Bob Quinn, the Lions GM, he has scouted the draft. So my guess is he feels there are wide receivers in the draft who can do, because Tate is perfect for that that Patriots style scheme, motions and bunches, yeah, and rubbing routes and all that. No, he's very good, and I mean he's a top five in the league at that stuff. So the fact that they traded him, and yet it's so apparent that this is what they want to do, leads me to believe they like some of the mid-round wide receivers in this draft, because Golden Tate is not a cheap wide receiver. He's an expensive veteran at this point, as is Eric Ebron. So I don't read as quite as much into that, but I understand the argument for it.
It is a draft that is loaded with depth at wide receiver and a lot of sort of slot specialist type guys too. So you might be right, Andy. Let's go Dallas. Kellen Moore takes over for Scott Linehan. Kellen Moore is your new offensive coordinator. This is sort of the same path that Jason Garrett took, former Cowboys backup quarterback, longtime backup quarterback to offensive coordinator here. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think of Kellen Moore as a play designer or anything like that. He's really only known the Dallas Cowboys.
I get asked about Kellen Moore more than, because he's from Boise State, and he is like the Tim Tebow of Boise, where you cannot – remember Tebow, you couldn't say anything remotely critical of him, or his supporters would get after you. That's how all of Boise is with Kellen Moore. It's a crime here to acknowledge that he's not 6'5", 240 pounds, because he's a little guy that they never gave a chance to. I am curious to see what his approach – is to offense. There's so many young offensive guys in the league right now too, calling plays and teaching quarterbacks. It's, if you're not 35 or younger, you're almost an outlier now for passing game designers in the NFL, right? Let's say, certainly if you're not under 40, you're an outlier.
The only Kellen Moore insight I have here is back when I was at Sports Illustrated Kids, when he was Boise State's quarterback, we had done a piece on him and his roommates were all complaining that he flooded the DVR with bad college football games, Sun Belt games, WAC games. He basically taped every game and watched like every college football game he could ever find to watch.
He is really into the nuts and bolts of football. And in college, DVR space, I remember when I was at college, a Sigma Chi fraternity, that was a big deal, who was using what on the DVR space.
Yeah.
And back then, DVRs did not have as much space as they do now. So that's an excellent side note. And I happen to know, because I met with Kellen Moore last year. He loves – he was into the college game immensely. I'm not surprised he DVR'd all the games. He loves the NFL game and the way the field is set up and how you can do – some of the stuff you can do in the NFL that you can't do in college, stuff that we talk about on this show. I think he really likes that a lot. So I would imagine we'll see some really a higher scheme Dallas offense than we've seen before, but that's not saying a whole lot either. They've never been a highly schemed offense to begin with.
Yeah, and obviously he should be very familiar with Dak Prescott from all the time they spent in the quarterback's room together. Three NFC North, well, one hiring and then two guys retained, and I guess one more hiring. But let's start with Chicago. Chuck Pagano is now the defense coordinator, replacing Vic Fangio. You used to talk all the time, Andy, what's the word you use? Fuzzy? That Vic Fangio's defense makes it for blurry.
Yeah.
My fault. What a mistake. How
fuzzy
blurry.
Kind of work. Fuzzy's a little more of a tangible word than blurry, though. Blurry implies vision.
Yes, fuzzy implies touch, and now we're getting really creepy as I make these hand motions toward you on our FaceTime. But Chuck Pagano comes in. Can he do the same type of thing? Obviously, it's a defense that's just loaded with talent.
It's absolutely loaded with talent. Chuck Pagano's another Boise guy, by the way. Pagano and Kellen Moore are the two Boise coordinators that we have. So you see him around town every
pipeline,
once in a while.
Yep.
he is – it's not the base stuff that Fangio did, 3-4, and how they would present some of their 3-4s and what they do with their defensive ends and what they teach them. Their defensive ends, they walk out against wide receivers who are in the slot, and if they see an outside zone play, they crash in hard no matter where they're lined up. Some of those staple ideas of the Bears, I imagine we're going to continue to see with Pagano. What we have to figure out is how good can they be with the nuances of how they present their coverages, and especially on third down where coverage is most important. That blurry, not fuzzy, blurry Bears defense, that doesn't happen by design. Someone's not – that doesn't come from what you're drawing on the chalkboard or the grease board or wherever you draw your plays now. That comes from how you're dealing with men out on the field on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and teaching guys hands-on. And that's what we don't know, if Pagano's the same kind of teacher as Fangio. Ed Donatell, their secondary coach, who I'm sure was a big part of those – blurry looks. He has left with Fangio as well. So that's a different Bears staff right now, Gary.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a really tough act to follow for Chuck Pagano. Like you said, lots of talent, obviously, there. But will it quite be what it was in 2018 here? Let's go to Green Bay, where Matt LaFleur is obviously the new head coach. He retains Mike Pettine as his defensive coordinator. And Andy and I, this has been, if you listen to the show, there's been an undercurrent of this battle between me and Andy, and I won't come right out and attack Andy directly on this, but Andy likes the Matt Eberflus and think that's the wave of the future, is getting these young guys in and keeping it simple and allowing them to play fast. I think Pettine in the long run might have some of what he does and sort of piling a lot on his young guys, and we'll see over the next maybe year or two, if it goes well enough this year, the next year or two, what's going to become of this young secondary that really had a lot put on its plate their rookie year.
Here's what I decided I don't like about Green Bay's secondary. This hit me late in the season. After every week when you sit down and watch Packer film, half of your energy is just going to keeping track to where each guy is playing. Who's at safety? Who's at corner? Who's in the slot? Who's at dime linebacker this week? It's always something different with those guys. Tremont Williams moved around. Josh Jackson moved around. Everybody, Josh Evans moved around a ton. Their 2017 second-round pick. Everybody moves around in that secondary, and your first instinct is, oh, wow, very versatile. Man, it's hard to follow all this. That's a lot to prepare for. But then what you come to realize is these guys aren't very good at this. They play a bunch of positions, but they don't really play any of them particularly well. And it's hard to develop guys when you're moving them around. It's especially hard to develop them if you're moving the guys around them around as well. Everybody's moving. You always have different people next to you and different assignments. And in the secondary and in a highly schemed offense or defense like Green Bay's, communication is key. And you could see it's not always there every week. And how could it be? Because it's not the same people communicating under the same conditions.
We'll see, Andy. I like the fact that they're all becoming flexible. They're learning to do different things. And especially once the Packers decided last year was going to be a lost season, I like the fact that they mixed things up a little bit.
Well, I know when Pettine came back in the league, I asked someone who, because I don't know Mike Pettine, but I know a lot of people who do know him, and I said, what do you think he'll do differently? And they said, I think he understands now that the stuff he did in his initial days in New York, or what he came up with, there's not as much time in practice anymore, the way that the league is set up and just the way these athletes are treated and how people approach football. You don't have the same amount of time to practice, so I think we'll see less from Pettine because of that. And so far, maybe we've seen a little bit less, but I don't know. I am not optimistic about how this is going. I know you like it, Gary, and maybe you're right, but
I like it in theory. We'll see how it plays out.
That's the problem with it. Good in theory. It's so good in theory, and it's not great in practice. I mean, and who wouldn't like the idea in theory of having 6 or 7 defensive backs that can play anywhere at any time? Everybody likes that theory, but you got to go out and be able to do it.
Well, that's why I'm a great football mind. I don't have to put anything in practice. I can just put out ideas in theory, and it doesn't matter if they work or not. There's no real world for it to be tested in, and now we get to see it a little bit. But let's stay in the NFC North for one more. This was Kevin Stefanski retained as offensive coordinator in Minnesota, but the big twist here was Gary Kubiak brought in. His position is assistant head coach and offensive advisor. Look, we saw what happened with John DeFilippo there a year ago when the Vikings were probably Vikings were probably the most disappointing team in the NFL last year. We all thought they were legitimate contenders, and obviously the whole thing fell apart. So Kubiak's in. You're going to see a ton of a lot of outside zone running now. Is it going to look more like the old Broncos or something like that? Well, what do they do with this offense to satisfy Mike Zimmer's insatiable appetite for running plays?
Well, it's got to start with the run game, and Kubiak, his pass game builds totally off of his running game. This is what I find bizarre, because Stefanski's one of the better young rising coaches in the NFL, and I think he's one of the better pass game designers in the NFL. Another guy under 40, by the way. If I were him, I would be feeling a strange pressure on me knowing that, because in the back of my mind, I know what Zimmer is, because Stefanski's worked for several different coaching staffs in Minnesota. He's seen how it's done, and he can see that Zimmer views and pressures his offensive coordinators a little bit differently than other coaches do. I don't think Zimmer's as easy to work for. Remember, Norv Turner quit halfway through the season. Norv Turner is a longtime established, highly regarded NFL veteran coach. So it's Turner or Zimmer's not easy to work for. Let's assume that's true. Now he's bringing in a guy who was going to be the offensive coordinator in Denver and who's not just some middling assistant. It's a Super Bowl champion head coach to be the assistant head coach and oversee the offense. And Zimmer has not been overly publicly supportive of Stefanski over the years. It's just a strange scenario. If I'm Stefanski, I'm feeling a lot of undue pressure on me right now. And I don't know, I guess the master you're serving is Mike Zimmer, but then you got Kubiak in the room. That's a weird position to put your coordinator in.
I do wonder if Zimmer trusts Kubiak to the point where Zimmer has just sort of said, you know what, I put my hands on this too much last year. I shouldn't have done it. I'm hands off of the offense, but I don't quite trust my really young guy. Now I got Gary Kubiak. Now I am not going to worry about the offense at all. Whatever happens, happens.
That's a great point, and I hope that's the way it is. That would be the best approach. And if Kubiak had not interviewed, or he probably didn't have to interview, but if he had not basically gotten penciled in for the job in Denver's offensive coordinator, I would see that totally being the case. Like, Kubiak's basically in here to be a senior assistant, which I think that is what his job title is. But it sounded like Kubiak wants to get a little bit more back into coaches. I don't know. We need to know what's coming first, the chicken or the egg, or I don't know, horse and apple cart, whatever the metaphor is. Who told Gary Kubiak? How did Gary Kubiak decide he's coaching again? Did he decide that and go to it and talk to Elway and then look around? Or did Elway go to Kubiak and say, we need you, can you please coach again? And then it didn't work out, and so Kubiak's taking a new assistant role. That's what we need to find out. We need to go get Gary Kubiak and make him tell us.
It was very strange. I think we even reported on one of the shows that Gary Kubiak had taken the Broncos job. But let's go NFC South. Hit a couple of these. Bucks. Bruce Arians in as head coach. Todd Bowles is his defensive coordinator. We've talked about him a little bit. It's going to be different there in Tampa. We would presume no more four-man rush that doesn't get there and zone defense that that breaks down play after play.
They did get better in their zones under Mark Duffner, their interim D coordinator in the second half of last season. Bowles, we know what he wants to do. Arians wants to be an attack defensive coach. That's what Arians wants in his defensive coach. Bowles can deliver that, but Bowles will not ask men to do stuff they cannot do. So don't expect that the Bucks, they'll evaluate their personnel and go as they see and go along with it. Don't expect the Bucks to look like the Cardinals did when they were on the verge of the Super Bowl that one year with Bowles calling their defense and Arians as a head coach. It's going to take them a little bit of time to get there, but that's where they want to be. That's where they want to get.
Falcons. Dan Quinn cleared out all of his coordinators. Steve Sarkisian gone. Mark Emmanuel gone. Dan Quinn will coordinate the defense. He'll call defensive plays. Dirk Cutter is the offensive coordinator now. When Sarkisian came in 2 years ago, the talk was, you know, this is, we're going to run Kyle Shanahan's playbook. Dirk Cutter seems like we have now completely moved away from that to an extent.
I think Dan Quinn realizes that we've got a Super Bowl caliber team right here, right now, and that's not going to be true forever. It just never is in the NFL. And the year they went to the Super Bowl, Quinn basically fired his D coordinator mid-season. He wound up firing him after the season as Rick Smith, but he took over the play calling from him during the season. Nobody noticed or talked about it, but it was Dan Quinn calling the plays down the stretch that year. He handed over to Marquand Manuel. They had a disappointing season on a number of fronts. I think this is Quinn saying, all right, give me the bird in the hand. Give me what I know. I know I can do it because I've done it. I believe in myself, and we did it the year in 2016 very well when I was calling the defense. And we know it works with Cutter because we saw that go that way and go really well with Matt Ryan years ago. We just need to get something figured out fast. We cannot afford to let coaches learn on the fly anymore.
Yeah, interesting team, especially if they stay healthy in 2019. And
Gary,
lastly,
I'll tell you a very interesting team because I had to rank the neediest teams in the NFL for the magazine this year, 1 through 32. I think I had the Falcons number 32 entering this offseason. They do not have any major needs, which when is the last time we saw a team miss the playoffs and come into the offseason with no immediate needs and no glaring needs to fill?
Yeah, I mean, what would you say? Maybe one more guard for the offensive line, and maybe you bulk up that that secondary a little bit more. That's lost some of its really good depth.
You could, and Robert Alford had not been released at the time that I wrote that, so that's a good point. Now they drafted Isaiah Oliver last year to eventually become their starting corner. He had an up and down season, but as a rookie, but they probably wouldn't dump Alford if they weren't optimistic about Isaiah Oliver at this point. I think I said pass rusher just because they have good pieces, but they don't always play that way. Tack McKinley, yeah. Grady Jarrett, who I assume they're going to re-sign. They're not going to let him get away. And
Vic Beasley,
that's a talented group of pass rushers and an underperforming pass rush. So given that they had no immediate needs, I said go find another pass rusher then and just see if you can't add a log on the fire and make the whole flame get bigger.
Arizona Cardinals, Robert Alford's new team. Cardinals are just collecting Atlanta Falcons, at least over the last week. They got Robert Alford, and they just signed Brooks Reed. Cliff Kingsbury is your offensive coach there, obviously, now the head coach. Brought in Vance Joseph as his defensive coordinator. So this seems like one more step away from the old James Betcher approach that they used and more toward a more straightforward scheme defensively in Arizona.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Should a coordinator feel obligated to tailor his scheme around Patrick Peterson, given that Peterson's one of maybe five guys in football who can truly play ISO man coverage on number one receivers snap after snap?
I mean, I guess the question is, if you're the Cardinals right now, legitimately, do you think you can compete for a championship next year? Probably not. So then you're talking about can Peterson continue to do this into his 30s, or do you start preparing for the next thing and just sort of say, look, it's going to take us a year or two to be back on that track? I guess my way of answering that is no.
You should not have to tailor the scheme around Peterson?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. And I probably don't disagree with you. I bet you if they had to do over again when they were having these – if they even had this conversation when they were hiring their head coach last year, Steve Wilks, it'd be interesting to see what they would have answered back then. Because they didn't – I guess we know what they would have answered. It would have been no because they hired Wilks, who didn't run a scheme that was all conducive to Peterson's strengths. And now they fired Wilks, but Vance Joseph isn't necessarily a man-to-man oriented defensive play caller either.
Yeah.
I think the answer is yes, to be honest with you. I think you do tailor your scheme around Patrick Peterson, especially since you have an edge rusher in Chandler Jones that can give you options. He can play in any kind of scheme and give you a pass rush off the edge.
Oh, look, that was the biggest disappointment with that Steve Wilks team last year, is the fact that they have those two guys. Those are two guys who anyone would take as their first two building blocks of a defense, and for them to essentially underachieve to the extent they did, it was hard to see them coming back from it. But that's a wrap. Those are all our coordinators. I guess when the Bengals land on a defensive coordinator, we'll talk about that. But we will have plenty more coaching talk, free agency, a little bit of draft maybe coming up starting in March once we're through free agency. But it will be a very busy offseason here at the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. That's going to do it for now. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor. For making us sound smart, thanks to producer Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. So we'll be back Mondays. Every Monday, we'll probably do an extra Thursday show here or there around free agency or around draft. But for the most part, it's just going to be Mondays. We'll fit in a mini mailbag every once in a while. So if you have questions, send them to talkback@themmqb.com. Or you can get us on Twitter or Facebook. The Wednesday show is coming up here. We'll have some sort of rotation with Albert and Jenny and Connor, and it's going to be a very, very interesting off season in the NFL. So go ahead, and if you don't already, subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.